Welcome to the Future Thinkers Podcast. I'm Mike Gilliland.
And I'm Yuvia Ivanova. And this podcast is all about the future.
Welcome again to the Future Thinkers Podcast, episode number 12. It has been a long, long time since we've podcasted. Why is that, Yuvasaurus?
Well, we've been working on some big projects. We are relaunching our video production company, and we've also been working with a jewelry company that we've produced some really cool stuff for. And we're kind of going to talk about some of it in this episode, but we also want to talk about some of the ideas surrounding both of those things, and namely the future of marketing, and not in the same sort of sleazy way that marketing is perceived by most people, not like tactics for manipulating the masses, but more along the lines of how can you capture the hearts and minds of people as a brand or as a company, or a lot of people are freelancers, so that applies too. Same thing for anyone really who wants to influence others. I think it applies. That's what we're going to talk about this episode.
We've been traveling around quite a bit since our last podcast episode. We're currently in Bangkok, but it's been an interesting couple of months since we last recorded, because we've learned a lot about how we offer our service, how we market it, how we position ourselves, what we talk about with our messaging, and what we're doing with our website. We've got a little bit of a different perspective on how people relate to brands and how people want to hear from their favorite brands. So we're going to talk about a little bit of the history of how brands have traditionally marketed to people, what they were doing in the last few years, last couple decades, and what is going to have to happen now and what is currently happening. Not all brands have caught up to this yet, but it's on its way. So why don't we start with the history lesson first?
We've been studying storytelling for a while now. The thing is that most of us grew up in the era of mass media and radio and television, people constantly being bombarded with advertisements and giant billboards in the cities. So I think a lot of people kind of think that it's normal to be communicated to in that way. But for most of human history, for thousands and thousands of years, the only way that people could communicate ideas to each other was through oral tradition, through storytelling. So people gathering around the campfire, gathering in the, you know, village center and sharing stories. It was still very, very much small groups, and everybody had the ability to tell stories. Whereas in the world that we grew up in, it was very different. And this was actually abnormal in the scope of human history.
The way messages and stories moved around in the oral tradition was through social networks. So it was always person to person, and if a story was crappy, it never got shared. If the story was awesome, it was remembered, it was shared. If the story accomplished a few things as well, it served the people, it entertained, it passed along some sort of important message to the survival of the group, then that was very important, and that message got shared quite a bit. But within the last 100 years, a new era has erupted called the broadcast era. And what the broadcast era is the ability for a small group of people with a lot of money to push out messages that only serve themselves or only serve a small select group of people. And the idea is really broadcasting a message to sell more products.
Spray and pray.
Mm-hmm. It didn't really matter who they were marketing to. It just mattered that enough people saw the message enough times just to buy a product. So it in no way served the person seeing the message, aside from some miracle cure or pill or product or whatever. It rarely entertained, aside from the occasional hilarious football commercial.
People couldn't avoid advertisements as well, because if you were watching your favorite program on TV, I mean, in the 50s, 60s, 70s, people didn't even have remotes. So if you wanted to change the channel, you had to get up off your butt, go to the TV, change the channel, and then, of course, networks would show their ads all at the same time, so you were watching either this ad or that ad anyway. So people couldn't really avoid these ads. And, you know, with giant billboards, obviously, how do you avoid that if you're driving to work? But now, you know, most people get their entertainment and information from the internet,
which is a vast method of distribution. I mean, there's so many different ways that you can find your information, going to specific people or networks. So as Gary Vaynerchuk always talks about, we as marketers really need to start going where the eyes and ears are of the people we want to connect with, and not just try and broadcast a message and spam everyone like we're still in the broadcast era. Because now we're in the digital era, And the digital era is all about storytelling and marketing that people want to see, not stuff that's being broadcast to them. You know, when we now have the option of installing Adblock Plus, skipping through ads and not paying attention to ads to begin with, or shitty content or shitty commercials or any of that kind of stuff, then it really becomes what is useful and what is entertaining that gets our attention. It's a really, really big fight for attention between companies and marketers and stuff now. It's really tough.
Yeah, and in the internet age, I think some companies have adopted this idea, and you know, content marketing has been a buzzword for a few years now, but I think so many companies are still doing it in the old way. You know, they create a problem. They make people feel inadequate. The other day, I was looking at a press release distribution site. And when I signed up for it, they automatically signed me up for their email marketing list. And so I was getting these emails that pretty much told me how inadequate I was and how I could never distribute my press release as well as it would be distributed if I paid them $1,000 or whatever. And it's just like, it's so obvious to me because I've studied this stuff, and it's like, oh, disempowerment marketing. Oh, some more disempowerment marketing. And they're finished up with like miracle pill. Here you go, $1,000, please.
Yeah, there's formulas to copywriting, and it's amazing how quickly it has to evolve, how quickly marketing has to evolve to keep up with the consumer, because the consumer is the one that's evolving the quickest and finding new ways to avoid that advertising. So, you know, when you go to a copywriter, a lot of the time they're still operating on these older methods and tactics of marketing. So the first thing they'll tell you is find the pain, find the customer's pain, exploit that, you know, point it out, make the pain bigger than it seems.
Yeah. So a really good example of this that has actually seen a backlash recently is the beauty industry. So beauty magazines and beauty brands, makeup brands, perfume brands, you know, deodorant brands have really pushed this idea that you're not pretty enough, you're not good enough, you're too fat, you stink, your zits are horrible, your hair will never look good enough by itself. So you need all these products to make you pretty and desirable and all this stuff. So it's definitely seen a backlash recently, and a lot of blogs and even brands like Dove, for example, they're trying to push this idea that sort of, you know, everybody's beautiful and you're beautiful the way you are and you just need like healthy skin or whatever. So I think that's a lot better, but it still has a ways to go.
So it's basically there's two, we're going from the oral traditions to the broadcast era and almost back to the oral tradition, but this time it's globally distributed.
Yeah, it's in the digital realm. People are not isolated anymore like they were in the 50s, sort of like, you know, in their bedroom communities, and they only knew a few neighbors and or didn't even know their neighbors. And they just drove to work and did their shopping in the big malls and didn't talk to anyone. But now social networks are huge again. You know, everybody's on Facebook and Twitter and Reddit and everything else. So that information, once again, is getting shared, and everybody is powerful in telling those stories and sharing that information. So, for example, in the past, if a company did something really shitty or made you wait, you know, on hold for 40 minutes before they gave you customer service, they could just get away with it. But now somebody will write a passionate, terrible review online, and it'll get shared 5,000 times, and suddenly the company's like, oh shit, we got to change our ways.
Yeah, it's actually amazing what kind of power the individual has now, especially when it comes to hotels and travel destinations and restaurants and everything. Like, we live off of TripAdvisor and Airbnb and these other sites that are just completely recommendation-based.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I always check for reviews when booking on Agoda or Booking.com, and I always leave reviews to make sure that other travelers have that information.
It's a really great way to force companies to submit to the will of the people, which is the way it should always have been. But, you know, for a while, the power is really kind of centralized and put in the hands of a small group of people, and with the internet, we're able to expand that back again. The idea between disempowerment marketing and empowerment marketing is that disempowerment pokes your fears and presents you with a miracle pill to solve them. And empowerment marketing makes the story about you, like you are the hero of this journey, you the customer. And you're trying to achieve something in your world, or maybe you're living in a status quo that's just not satisfactory to you. And the idea with the empowerment marketing is that the brand has to position themselves as the mentor. They're the one with the information or the power to help, or the product that is a tool to help you achieve a better life.
Right.
So it's not about saying, hey, you're not good enough, here's a product. It's saying, hey, honestly, if you want to go here, here's a product that might help you. It's more of a stepping stone than a cure. You're still going to have to do the work.
Mm-hmm. And I love that idea because people appreciate that so much more. You know, if you get something without some sort of revelation or inner journey or inner, you know, you had to do something to get it, then you don't really appreciate it. But people appreciate it so much more when it's their own journey that they decided on a destination in their own mind, and then there's something out there that helps them. Whereas, you know, with disempowerment marketing, it's brands creating these like non-existent fears and non-existent problems. Like, you know, with the deodorant industry, that was never really talked about until somebody invented Pit Stick, and they're like, well, how are we going to market this? Okay, well, let's tell people that they stink.
Mm. Yeah, you know, it's really like marketers have done this to themselves over several years. They've made themselves the opposition to the customer. It's been about how much money can we extract from the customer's wallet. And really, I think it's a missed opportunity for both sides, for the customer and the brand, because the customer might want to achieve something that this product can solve, but they're so sick of advertising and so sick of being told how shitty their life is and how much they need this product that they just ignore everything. They put on blinders and ignore everything. And the brand misses out as well because they've done the same message, they've done the same thing for so long, and they've made the customer get used to a certain way of speaking, a certain message. And so now they're kind of stuck. Mm-hmm. Like there's no way to get through anymore because the customer has just turned on their blinders. It makes me feel bad for both parties, and I feel like we're missing out on a big opportunity to all work together. Mm-hmm. You could imagine if a company with billions of dollars created a plan to actually make the world better, to start working on renewable energies. Imagine if these companies did the work because the people had the power and they simply demanded it.
I lived in Denmark for a year, and I know that the standard for produce there is so much higher just because people refused to buy milk that had hormones in it or vegetables that were sprayed with pesticides. People just simply refused, so companies had to follow. And so, yeah, the standard of produce is much higher there for the same price that it is in North America. People are powerful, and they will tell you what they want. So it's just in the company's interest to listen. And, you know, people are talking about this on Twitter or on forums, so companies just have to go there and read about it. It's easy. Mm-hmm. So why don't we talk about some companies that are doing it right? I mean, we mentioned Dove, and yeah, some people criticized it because it's still focusing on this external thing, which is beauty, whereas, you know, they could have maybe been focusing on building self-esteem or getting people to get involved in something less superficial. Mm-hmm. For example, Tom's Shoes. I like the way that they do their marketing because it's based on doing something good in the first place. So they wear their ethics and their beliefs on their sleeve. It's a company that for every pair of shoes they sell, they donate a pair of shoes to an underprivileged child in Central America and I think other places too. And so I think that's really cool because people buy those shoes and they feel good about themselves, you know? It's not your feet are ugly unless you wear our shoes. It's something bigger. I can't say anything good about their manufacturing practices, and I actually don't feel qualified because I don't know. But Nike, I like their message. Just do it, because it's not about, like, you're inadequate, you need our shoes to feel cool. It's more about, you know, you will be a champion or you will win the race if you work really hard for it and stay diligent and become the best athlete you can be.
And Nike is just the shoe or the clothing is just sort of a tool to help you get there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know what you mean. But think about it. We're talking about them because of their marketing, but we're also including that information that their manufacturing processes are still shit. Mm-hmm. So I think storytelling can get you talked about. Empowerment marketing can get you talked about. But the message is still there and the people still have the power to talk about the negative things you're doing. So it's like, yeah, you can shine a spotlight on something, but is it good? And that's exactly what's happening right now is we're saying, no, don't buy Nike. So what do you say to companies that are still like, well, fear affects the bottom line, you know, poking at your fears or your insecurities or anything like that? It does sell more products. So why would I be motivated to empower people?
We already talked about the idea that people are fighting back and they're exposing companies who are doing shitty things or don't have their ethics in the right place. And they're using Adblock Plus. I mean, on some websites, it's like over 50% of people are using Adblock Plus, especially on tech websites. You know, tech-savvy young people under 30 especially are using it. So that's obviously one reason, more of a selfish reason if you're a marketer or a company or a brand wanting to reach people. But I think on a deeper level, that kind of disempowering marketing is just affecting us as a society. It's creating this society that's drenched in fear and insecurity and all the things that come out of that, like vanity, you know, people becoming really vain to mask their own insecurities because they feel ugly and small and not good enough. And so they wear a shit ton of makeup and get plastic surgery. And from the outside, it looks like they're, you know, confident and vain. But in reality, they just feel shitty inside.
Yeah, I think it's created a culture of people who seek to solve their problems with external solutions. Mm-hmm. It's always external, like, because it's hard to go inside and be quiet and look inside yourself and try and find the solution to your own problems or to accept yourself. Mm-hmm. Like, it's difficult to do that self-reflection. Well, I think because of their training, because of marketing messages for several decades, it's easy for them to just look for the external solution and put a band-aid on it and take a pill for that. You know, it's really too bad because it is really reinforced the kind of society that lives for now, doesn't look at communities, and causes us to not take care of our groups.
And it encourages addictive behavior, both with consumerism and with food and pleasure-seeking activities and gambling and all these things. All these industries are playing on people's primal urges and sort of reinforcing this childish behavior, you know? And then if you advocate against that, people just call you a monk. You're like, oh, well, I want to enjoy myself. You can cut sugar out of your diet. Go ahead. But, you know, I want my ice cream and donuts.
Like, how happy does that really make you? It's like you have it and you feel worse usually.
You're like, oh, like, God, I'm such a fat pig.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, these things never make you feel good.
Yeah, it's just that moment. Like, I think a lot of the time people don't really think about it, but it's, you know, one moment of feeling good and then maybe a day of regret. Or maybe even longer, depends on what you're doing. If you gamble away $50,000 in a night, it could be years to recover from that.
How fitting is this? We just came back from another meditation retreat this year. I guess we're kind of doing it annually now. But yeah, this one was really interesting too. Yuvi and I got a lot of insights out of it. And again, the big thing is like how much do you want to seek pleasure and then pay for it tomorrow?
Yeah. And it's not to say that you should just like quit sex and quit drinking and become a monk and sleep on a board for the rest of your life without a pillow, which, by the way, we had to do at the retreat. It was brutal. But what I'm saying is just do everything in moderation and be aware when you're seeking stimulation to cover up some internal pain or anxiety or fix a problem with something external, mm-hmm. because it never works in the long run.
Exactly. Moderation is the big thing. This is sort of like going back to, you know, looking inside rather than picking something externally. When people decide, oh, I've had enough, alcohol is becoming a problem in my life, they just cut everything. They just clear the table of everything. And I don't want to encourage drinking, but you might miss out on opportunities to socialize with people who are in that kind of environment. And I mean, we've had a lot of business deals go through over drinks. It's true. It's social lubrication. So there are ways in which living for today or living for the little bit of pleasure actually gives you more benefit. I think it's just important to know what you're sacrificing to get that benefit and that you do things in moderation. You know when you're over your limit.
Yeah, like having a glass of wine with dinner and then chilling out with your friends or talking about a business deal, it's not going to hurt you in the long run. There's actually research that came out, and I'm going to try to find a link for it, which will be in the show notes, that people who drink moderately, like, you know, a glass of wine with dinner a couple times a week, have longer life expectancy than people who don't drink at all. So it seems that, like, that little bit of drinking is actually beneficial to health.
Yeah, I would say there's a lot of correlation to go along with that, though. Like,
yeah, it's just correlation. It's not causation. But either way, the numbers are there. And also, I mean, wine, I can't say the same for beer, but wine has been shown to have health benefits, like it strengthens your heart and whatever else they want to claim. But
make me dance better.
Yeah, it does make you dance better.
Makes you sexier.
Nice.
That was rude. I'm sorry about that. You're totally sexy.
So, all right, back to marketing. So what can companies do to connect to their audience? I'm going to answer the question myself. And actually, Gary Vaynerchuk talks about this a lot. I think you got to be human. You need to talk to people like a human being, not like a faceless corporation. For example, in our podcast, we swear. And because it's a human thing. Like, sometimes you just need to swear for emphasis. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that in moderation. So I got a comment once on Twitter, I think, about some guys that said that a podcast is horrible because the guest was swearing constantly. And I suspect that was the John Myers, Terry Lynn episode.
Sons of bitches swearing all the time.
But it's like, it makes you human, you know? Or if you talk about something that's slightly controversial, brands are so afraid of talking about anything controversial because they have to keep up the corporate image and buttoned up, you know, shirt all the way.
Yeah, they don't want to offend anyone. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the big thing. When you got products on the line and a business on the line, you don't want to say anything that kind of rocks the boat too much. But I think if you're a brand and you're making good money and you're creating value in the world, you have an opportunity to do more with that a little bit of money. It doesn't even have to be much. Just take a percentage and dedicate that to something that makes the world a better place. And tell those stories. It's really easy. I mean, you can base all of your marketing around what you do for the world.
Mm-hmm. And it doesn't even necessarily have to be a charity, because a lot of brands do this. That's, you know, their corporate giving. They just give their 1% to charity and forget about it. I think it should be more involved. You know, like brands that are starting their own sort of, not necessarily charity, but world development projects, as I would call it. So it's not just a Band-Aid solution, but it's, you know, educating people or giving people opportunities or scholarships for students in the developing world or something, you know, something that actually helps people become better. And that feeds right back into the idea of empowerment marketing, because you don't want to just provide a Band-Aid solution for people or a miracle cure that'll just, you know, make them feel good for today. You want to help them achieve their own life goals. So it's the same in your marketing and in your, you know, doing good for the world projects.
Yeah, and I feel like it's not even going to be a matter of companies deciding that they want to do this, you know, out of the goodness of their collective hearts. I think it's going to be no other option. I could be totally wrong about that. Again, this podcast is all about speculation, but it just seems like the way people are talking about brands and the willingness to do a little bit of research to find reviews is increasing. So we're going to have that social proof. It's going to be more and more important for a brand.
Or at the very least, like, clean up your act. Stop doing unethical stuff. Stop manufacturing your products using 13-year-old slave workers in the third world, which unfortunately a lot of companies are still doing. Until they get exposed, and then suddenly they're like, oh, okay, let's divert attention to something else. Kim Kardashian, over here. Look at Kim Kardashian's butt.
Shiny keys. Yeah, it's really funny the way they treat us, actually. You know, on Twitter with their stupid little marketing campaigns, taking advantage of social events. Like, I love how that backfires.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what are some examples of backfiring Twitter campaigns?
Oh my God. What was it? What was that airline that somebody tweeted? Oh my God. That's my favorite one. Somebody tweeted a picture of a woman with her bottom half naked shoving an airplane down her hoo-ha.
Her hoo-ha, eh?
A vagina. A toy airplane. So they tweeted this image at an airline, and the airline accidentally retweeted it. because they, you know, they messed up the link. They thought it was a link for something else, for their customer support or whatever, or at least that's what they're saying.
Well, I don't think that was just an accident, though. I think a better example would be my NYPD.
Oh, yeah, that was
great. Or my LAPD.
Too.
I forget which
NYPD,
one.
NYPD, yeah.
Was it? Oh, that was hilarious. So they had this idea, New York Police Department had this idea to kind of stir up support for the police department to create a hashtag campaign called My NYPD. And they wanted people to send in pictures of them, you know, interacting in a friendly way or whatever with the police. And of course, people went the other direction. They were trolling and they found pictures of, you know, police brutality and them getting taken away in handcuffs. And it was predominantly black people being arrested. It was just like a complete
social media disaster.
And it's hilarious. And I checked it recently, actually. They're still posting stuff to that. It's just got a life of its own. Awesome. But I mean, really, like if you are doing the wrong thing and then you want to draw attention to yourself, like people will talk about it.
Especially if people just have their motivations in the wrong place, like they're doing it to cover something up or out of ego, or if they're trying to distract people with a viral campaign, but they're still doing unethical things behind the scenes, people are going to talk about it. Mm-hmm. It's actually going to give them more ammunition to talk about it.
Exactly. Yeah, very true. People's bullshit detection is excellent. Again, to quote Gary Vee.
Especially younger people who grew up with advertising, they're very sensitive. I think the baby boomers are kind of, I don't want to make a blanket kind of statement, but I think younger people are especially sensitive. Mm-hmm. To ads.
Nobody owns a TV. No one cares about cable. You know, one of the biggest celebrities on the planet is a guy that sits in front of a computer and plays video games and comments on them. Like South Park just did an episode on PewDiePie recently. Kids recognize PewDiePie more than Beyonce, more than any other celebrity.
More than Barack Obama. And
yeah, he's just a dude in his basement recording these videos. It's great. Anyway, so the final lesson here, what should brands be doing? What should customers be doing? Let's talk about the way to move forward on both sides.
So we already talked about this, you know, be more human, clean up your act, start doing things more ethically, start doing something good for the world, and talk about it. And don't make yourself the hero of your story. Make your customer the hero of the story. Get customers to send in stories, inspirational stories of them overcoming something or achieving something, and tell those stories.
Unless you're the New York Police Department, then don't solicit stories.
Oh, God. Then clean up your act.
Yeah.
That's the main.
Clean up your act first.
Clean up your act first, yeah.
Yeah, and you got to dig out of a hole, too. Like, we're in Thailand, so we don't cook. We go out, we're always deciding which restaurant we want to eat at. And every time we go out, I'm like, hey, we should go to KFC. And I'm joking, because I don't really want KFC. But Yuvi's just so appalled at the idea of going to KFC that she, like, physically reacts to it. It's so funny. And McDonald's as well. But, I mean, this is after years and years of negative brand association. You know, you have actually no idea what's on KFC's menu or what's on McDonald's menu. You just know you're turned off. McDonald's could have the healthiest salad menu you've ever seen, and you won't step foot in that place.
Never.
So brands like that have a long way to go. And, I mean, if you're a marketer and you're aware of this kind of negative brand association that happens over time when a brand screws up enough, you've got very little chance of actually changing your mind, and you're aware of these tactics. So the average person who knows nothing about marketing is not going to be changing their mind anytime soon. Yeah, it's an uphill battle if you've already got some negative brand association. And so it should be. I mean, if you're doing the wrong thing and you've been doing it for decades just for profit before people, then yeah, you deserve for it to be a bit of an uphill climb. But you have to do it. You have to try. And there are definitely ways to make it easier on yourself. Just do the right thing. Do the right thing.
Yeah. So what about customers? I actually am a proponent of Adblock. A lot of people in media production don't advocate the use of Adblock because that's how they make their money. And, you know, a lot of YouTubers make their money from ads. But I think there are honestly better ways. I think there are different ways to monetize and people should be exploring different options.
Mm-hmm. It's just that currently it's a cash cow. I mean, maybe not for everyone, but I mean, it's a way to bring in money, so they're latching onto it and they want to protect it. I mean, I'm on the same page. I've got Adblock Plus installed. Because I'm a marketer, I do want it off certain sites because I want to know. Like, I want to know what Facebook is advertising to me, for example. because I know a lot of my friends on Facebook are marketers, so I want to see what they're doing, and I'm interested in that. But for the most part, like YouTube ads, oh God, they're annoying.
Yeah, it's the worst. Aren't they annoying? Especially in Thailand, because they haven't figured out their targeting properly, so they're just, you know, they're loud, they're obnoxious in your face, and they're in Thai. And of course, I don't speak Thai, so they're useless to me. Just like, look at my language preferences. Why don't they target for that?
Yeah, it's so simple. It's so simple. It's just a button, and they would save themselves so much money. I mean, so many Thai companies. And you can imagine this is happening all over the world in all different countries. People are just not targeting the language. They think a blanket video is just going to work for everyone. So I think context is super, super important. You've got to have your message in place. You've got to be telling your customers stories. You've got to be doing the right thing. And you've got to be thinking about the context and the location that you're advertising in.
And who you're targeting. It's not spray and pray anymore. You have to understand who your customer cohort is. You know, if it's young single mothers, then like find out what they like, targeted by interest, targeted by age. If you can find out their marital status and whether they have children, then target just them. Mm-hmm. And speak to them in a way that, you know, that speaks to them in a way that they understand and can relate to.
Mm-hmm. And you might think, I mean, if you're a marketer listening to this, you might think, yeah, duh, that's obvious. But if it were obvious to everyone, then we wouldn't get more shitty, irrelevant ads than we do relevant ads. There would be no reason for me to have AdBlock Plus up because I love everything I'm getting. If the messaging and the context is right, I should want to see the ad. That's the important thing, is that we need to want to work with brands. We need to want to see their messages because the messages help us. They make our lives better. So this is like the way it used to be, where like, yeah, we might have actually been looking for the advertisements, or we buy magazines to look for the advertisements. So the messaging has to get more relevant. And I think on the customer side, maybe we have to give them a chance. I don't really know. Like, I'm don't want to be advertised to. So.
No. I don't know. I don't want to be advertised to either. And I think that's why companies have to produce good content that people actually want to share and people actually want to see. Back to the Dove ad, so many people shared it because they thought it was inspirational. And why don't companies make more stuff like that, that people actually look at it and it makes them feel happy and they want to share it? Mm-hmm. Or it's just, maybe it's just interesting. Maybe it's a tech company sponsoring a science show, you know, like they create their own science show where they talk about tech innovation and people will want to share that. Mm-hmm. And then at the end it says, you know, this program was brought to you by whatever tech company.
Yeah, there's so many ways you can make content to help and serve your customers. You know, we come at this from so many different ways, but you can make videos to answer your frequently asked questions. So easily, right off the bat, you have a list. Maybe you have a frequently asked questions page. You can make a video for every single one. And people are looking for those. You know, if they're asking the question, they want to see the video, right? Then you can also position yourself as an expert by making a list of the questions that you know they should be asking, but they don't know they should be asking. What else? There's so many different ways. Tell your brand story. Tell your customer's story. Just seek to solve problems for your customers at all times. Always be solving problems. Not always be closing, always be solving. It's got to be emotionally impactful, right? And so we got hired a few months ago by a jewelry company to produce a brand story. And basically, he hired us to make a showcase, basically, of start to finish of how the jewelry is manufactured. With our experience and what we're aiming to do in the world, we thought, well, this is actually a really cool story. And after talking with the owner of Equally, we learned that he's actually really passionate what he does about the stones, about the manufacturing process, about making everything ethically. You know, we ended up just sitting on the couch, having a couple of beers, and recording exactly the same way we do with these podcasts. And we just asked him questions, you know, how do you feel about this? What are your goals here? What do you love most about what you do?
Like, how did you come to be where you are now? What's the story?
Mm-hmm. So we got the story out of him, and it was a third-party thing. I don't know that you can really do that yourself. It was like he was in a conversation, so he was speaking to us naturally.
Candidly.
And yeah, mm-hmm. It was droll. And that's how I think you make the best stories. So we did the voiceover, and then that dictated exactly what the video was going to be. So we had the voiceover, and then we just fit in scenes to match with the voiceover. There's like no shitty sales tactics or anything. But because it's candid, because it's human, I think it's easy to accept. And so he's, since we finished this video, he's shown it to his friends and shown it to customers and potential partners and stuff. It started opening doors because he's never had this kind of message before. So people are seeing this video and just jumping at the chance to work with them, where they emotionally react. Like, he's shown this to a couple of dates even, and he had them almost in tears watching this video. Like, that's amazing. You know, imagine a brand that can do that for you. Like, make you feel so good, you're on the verge of tears. Or it's so powerful.
And we'll leave you with a question of the day. What do you guys think brands could do to communicate better with their customers? Leave the answer in the comments below. And if you're listening to this on iTunes or on Stitcher, you can go to our website for the show notes, which is where we'll have all the links and the write-up about this episode and all the mentions and things. And that will be at futurethinkers.org/episode12. We've recently gotten some new reviews. Yeah, and thank you to all of you guys who have sent us a message or tweeted at us or talked to us on Facebook asking when we're going to release new episodes. It's really encouraged us to record more. Yeah, so we've gotten two new 5-star reviews on iTunes. One from Enern. I hope I'm pronouncing this right, but it says, incredible, amazing podcast. And then another shorty from Casey 077 that says, sweet, awesome podcast. So thanks, guys. We really appreciate the reviews. And it's awesome to see that there are people listening to it and enjoying the show. So thank you. And if you're listening to this and you haven't subscribed to us yet, then you can do that on iTunes or Stitcher. And we always appreciate reviews. So if you feel up for that, then please leave us one. So thanks for listening. I think we're actually going to record a new episode right after this one and then publish it a few days later. So stay tuned. Talk to you later.
Bye.